Hi, and welcome to the Jump In Podcast. This is a premiere episode of a podcast that I've created. My name's Evan Manning. I'm really excited to bring this to you guys. It's going to be a lot of fun. I'm going to have a video cast so you'll be able to see my face. Wanted to design a podcast to kind of bring in some open conversations, have some good chats, you know, have some good guests on. I don't really have a singular point of topic. I just want to talk about things that are going on in life. And just have some good chats, have a good vibe. I'm here today at Oliver's Cigar Lounge, which is in Shamokin, Pennsylvania. It's a really cool atmosphere here, and I thought it'd be a great spot to record my very first episode of this podcast series. So just want to give you guys a little bit of background about myself. First and foremost, like I said, my name is Evan Manning. I am a real estate agent, and I cover all of Pennsylvania, a little bit locally in Berks County and the surrounding areas all the way up here to Shamokin as well. I also work for an LED video display company, which is really cool. We put video displays in a lot of different venues, sports stadiums, arenas, cruise ships. So I do that on the side as well. So I've got a lot of cool background with life and where it's brought me in this journey. So I thought it'd be good to put together a podcast, have a good fun chat. And the title, the name Jump In, really came in because I've gone through some rebranding with my real estate. One of the ways that people recognize me and know me is that I've always been big into shoes. So I've gotten into the Jordan brand sneakers recently and been kicking those around. So that I'd bring and tie everything together with that branding. But like I said, not always going to focus on real estate. Definitely have a few podcast episodes about that, but definitely want to have some fun and some good chats. So got a really exciting first episode that I want to just dive straight into. Really the main focal theme of this episode is going to be a bit of redemption and then into the sports world a little bit, because there's been a lot happening in life lately. So I thought catching everyone up to speed would be a lot of fun. First and foremost, January 20th was last week, a week ago from today. President Trump was sworn into office for the second time. And whether you love the man, hate the man, I don't want to get into the politics of, you know, policies that he's doing, things like that. We'll hopefully dive into some of those a bit later and how they impact, you know, even my line of work and things like that. But just to keep it on topic with the redemption story. So the way that I want to talk about it and kind of bring it full circle is that, you know, we have, you know, he came down, you know, the escalator at Trump Tower in 2016. Prior to that, people obviously liked him. He was a celebrity. Kind of started getting a bad rap when he announced he was running for president. Had 4 years in office, very turmoil 4 years. COVID happened in 2020, really sent him down on that downward spiral trajectory. I really think with redemption, you know, you kind of hit lows, like really low points, and then you kind of bring him back up to that high point. And so even for someone like him, you know, he hit that low. I'd say 2020 was really just a terrible year for him. You know, with COVID happening, he became very angry, very terrible demeanor, which I think ultimately is what led to him not winning that election in 2020. And then everything that followed right there after he had lost the election with all the crazy lawsuits and challenging the election. And then obviously January 6th happened, which, you know, I think will be talked about for a very long time. You know, whether he's to blame or not for that, I think that we can all agree it's probably the lowest day in Donald Trump's life, or one of the lowest days. But then he's been on that upward trajectory and that climb back into, you know, the atmosphere of life since then. He's obviously had his, you know, cases and things like that with the legal challenges and stuff for the past year while Biden was in office. But I think then what really brought that redemption story back around, which is, you know, happened here in Pennsylvania, which is why I wanted to bring it up. You know, Butler, PA, the assassination attempt really set him off. I didn't think he was actually going to be the Republican nominee there for a little while, and then he ended up getting it. And then I think, you know, that event in particular kind of skyrocketed and launched his popularity again after that incident had happened. And, you know, again, whether you agree with him or not, I think even the demeanor a little bit and how he presents himself in some ways has changed a bit. And I think, you know, that event has impacted some of that. So, and that's kind of where I want to go with this. So we kind of see that redemption. He's back in office. He can kind of, you know, hopefully rewrite himself and a little bit of history here as well over these next 4 years, but we'll see what happens. But one of those things that he will always give praise to with what happened in on January, or sorry, here in Butler, PA, after that event, is that he looks and he praises God for that and thinks, you know, and I genuinely believe that he thinks that, you know, he was kept alive for a reason, and that was God's plan and message to keep him around and to keep spinning on that, and how I'm going to transition this into sports. I'm also going to bring some guests on here in a minute to kind of help further this conversation, but there's even been a redemption with God in sports. And I think that's kind of where I want to tie all this together and, you know, take Notre Dame, that national championship game, and how that team has really made themselves God-centric. And then, you know, they're a non-conference team, which obviously got a lot of backlash, but they put all that aside. They focus on their team, where they're at, and, you know, God's plan and God's messaging, and they play through all that. And I think, you know, listening to their head coach, what a great guy, good head on his shoulders, and the way that he talks and conducts himself, it's really been empowering. You know, even Heeler, Ohio State's quarterback, after they won the national championship, talking about how even that team impacted them and their beliefs and kept that growing trend. And it's good to see that making a comeback in sports, and it's starting to hit the NFL a lot. A lot of players now doing interviews and things like that. So, yeah, it's really cool stuff, but not to keep rambling on by myself. So I'm going to bring my guests on. We're going to have a good chat. We're going to keep this conversation going around God in sports, and then just sports in general, because obviously we had the conference championships in the NFL this past weekend. So bringing that to the forefront and that into the light. So let's kick it off.
All right.
So I've got two guests with me. My first guest is live here with me in Pennsylvania, Andrew Chisholm. He is a good friend of mine that I've known for about 10 years.
Maybe a little more than that, 12.
Crazy story how we met, real quick. Just quick background before we continue on with our topics. So Andrew and I actually worked together at the Charlotte Hornets. We just met happenstance in an elevator, and I was already in the elevator, I think, and Andrew got in, or other way around, whatever. I was living by myself at the time, but was looking to actually get a roommate at my apartment, and ironically, in that moment, Andrew just turned and looked at me at random, never even said hi, and was like, hey, do you happen to know anyone looking for a roommate at the moment? And I was like, yeah, me. So we just kind of hit it off, and kind of took off, and we've been really good friends ever since. We lived together in Charlotte. We both ended up moving back here to Pennsylvania at a similar time to further our careers, and then now we're back together again. So Cole is sitting remote somewhere in middle of nowhere, South Dakota.
That's right, yep, the right off of South Dakota.
Cole and I work together currently. I mentioned the company Daptronics that does the LED displays in my intro. Cole and I have actually met through that, and both have a lot of common grounds. I think we actually, you were what, an RSS or a service coordinator, while I was the account manager. So we got to know each other a little bit through that, and then now Cole is also an account service manager with me, covering a different territory. So we both have a good love for sports and football in particular. And Cole, you're a Vikings fan, and Andrew's a Buffalo Bills fan, and I'm a Cincinnati Bengals fan. So none of us like to pick teams that win Super Bowls, so at least we all have that in common. So good times to look forward to. So, guys, I was just talking about, and I'd like to get your guys' opinion on this and thoughts on this, and I was just talking about the rejuvenation of God in sports and how that's kind of impacted and played a bit. So Notre Dame's kind of led the charge. I don't know how much you guys follow college. And I'm not a huge college person, but it really caught my attention and interest with college football when these guys were bringing this to the forefront, and Notre Dame's head coach really made a lot of waves in the media with it. So, I look back and where Tim Tebow even came from when he was, big and advocate for Christianity and sports and kneeling, and he got a lot of backlash from it. So that whole redemption thing, I mean, you look back at the time where he was at till where we're at today and now, like, it's pretty fascinating how we've kind of gone through this mega shift. What do you guys think about this?
Yeah, I just think from my perspective, I mean, I don't think it's a coincidence that majority of the successful teams in the college football playoff had members of the respective teams thanking and appreciating God after post game conference. I think it's certainly a revelation in the last couple of years, especially when times have gotten tough. I think you've seen that kind of come back to light from a nationwide perspective with a lot of these college teams. So yeah, I certainly don't think it's a coincidence that the leaders of each respective teams are putting their grace to God for the performances. So
That's an interesting point.
Yeah, I think my thought is the time difference between Tim Tebow to now is probably what, 10 years, 15
Yeah,
years,
roughly.
and how it was so, I don't want to say frowned upon, but so many people were like, what is he doing? He should never mix this. And now it's back to the forefront, and it made it to the top. It's at the national championship of the college footballs, and it's, I definitely see it coming back. I don't see it as a bad thing in any way. And I unfortunately have not been paying attention to it that much. I've never seen, not really seen it, but I'm not against it. Go for it. I like that. I like the bringing him in because everyone believes in something at some point, whether it's cheese is the best piece of dairy on their pepper on your pizza or something. You have a belief in something.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting. So I actually went to church this past Sunday. The priest actually at church spoke about this, and not to go down this big rabbit hole, but I didn't actually know this, but he was speaking to there's a pope out in Ohio that he was talking to that actually was talking about how within the past year or two, Ohio State went through this whole big push because they were realizing that they have a church on campus and church services, and they try to get people in. And what they were realizing is that a lot of the older, like 30, like 40, 50, 60-year-old alumni were the one attending those mass services to come back to Ohio State and be on the campus and be around this. And they said, well, what's the common-centric thing missing? And he was talking about how students were the current students were the ones that were missing, or the recent graduates of Ohio State were all the ones missing. So they went through this major change, like they removed a lot of the current, staff within that church, that organization, and they rebranded it and brought it all back to the forefront. They really targeted students and, athletes and all those people there, and then less than a year later they're playing and winning a national championship in Florida. So it seems that that's had a pretty residual effect on that team. So it was a really interesting story to see it all come together. So
Yeah, absolutely. And I personally, I see it in the college basketball side as well. I think you're starting to see I don't know if it's results from anything specifically, but yeah, I mean, I just see it from a team-wide perspective more and more over the last couple of years.
yeah.
And I really don't appreciate the way the media kind of suppresses some of those thoughts post game. I certainly see that more of a professional perspective rather than the collegiate perspective. But you've seen these media networks try to silence that, and I don't really think that's fair. I think these players have a platform and they're free to speak on what they'd like to. So
Agreed.
yeah, even if cheese is the top. But no, I what if what exact religion is that in Ohio State? Was it Catholicism or just an overall Christian?
I don't. He didn't delve into that. I think. I mean, it was some form of Christianity. I don't. He didn't
Okay.
say whether it was Catholicism, but yeah, he just mentioned the whole rebranding of that. But I imagine it was probably along those lines. Yeah. So.
Yeah, I've seen even in the local level, in the high schools and stuff, the Christianity growth of religion, and going to churches now, and you're hearing of half the basketball team going to church together on a Sunday, and you're like, at a high school level,
Yeah.
that's impressive. And the
Right.
fact they believe in it, and they form their relationship around it, and
Yeah.
I just can see that grow. Unfortunately, I've always paid attention to Catholic schools like St. Bonaventure and Notre Dame,
Sure.
and so I'm a little biased when it comes to that, but.
No, but you're right. I mean, it's really cool to see, and it's almost creating like this whole new wave of, sports that we're in. Like people are, it's almost like we brought, we go back to the Tim Tebow thing, and it's almost like when that happened, people were afraid to almost start speaking about it because they were seeing how the media, like Cole was saying, they were suppressing it, or they were treating him poorly and mocking him for it. And so
So it's
it's almost
also
like even if
that
athletes
happens.
believed it before, there was
It
like this fear of
fears
speaking out
help
because of that
them
rejection,
reshape
what that would do for
to
them and their popularity and things like that if they were to actively speak on these topics. And now you're seeing this wave of players and athletes and all that coming through. And yeah,
It's
it's
really
really cool
cool.
to see that growing trend. So I think it's really awesome.
Absolutely. Agreed.
So I do remember the narrative when Tim Tebow was going through that of some of the folks paying attention more to Florida and Denver when he played for Denver and professionals just because of his beliefs. And they were like, I'm going to follow him wherever he goes because I'm a fan of Tim Tebow and his religion and what he believes. He's bringing their beliefs and his beliefs to the forefront no matter what the backlash is.
Yeah, 100%. And you got to give him credit for taking that stand, and he never gave up on it either. Like he did it all the way through his career, regardless of the backlash and what people thought.
Awesome.
So it's
It's
really
really
cool.
cool.
And
And
like I said, I really love Notre Dame's head coach. I don't. I mean, I other than his media stuff and that he's done. I mean, he's the one that's been leading a lot of this charge. And I think, you know, in like Cole was saying with the media and stuff, they've almost tried to bait him into certain topics and, you know, having these conversations around politics or, you know, the race things getting played around. I don't want to dive too much into that stuff, but he would always kind of twist it and bring it back to putting God at the forefront in all of his answers. And I thought that was absolutely incredible how he's been able to kind of really conduct himself and keep politics and all that stuff away from it while bringing in what he truly believes to be the central nature of everything that they do. So that's pretty cool. And even like media pundits, I think even Stephen A. Smith is one of them now. Like he's starting to become more vocal on some of these topics and bringing them out and talking about them. So you're seeing even some of these, you know, media pundits starting to get on board with this as well. And I think that's awesome that this is starting to become a cool trend. So
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Yep. I mean, I think it's even more important in a world filled with, NIL and other things that kind of take your focus away from the team. I think it's a good I think when your leaders are more focused on the team and more so God, I think it's I think it creates a better recipe for success. So
yeah, 100%. And you know, just on that, I mean, the vibe that it brings and things like that. I mean, if we, you know, I always looked at it and us as kids, right? You look back in days when we were kids and how would we spend like Sundays as families, you know, all gathered around watching sports. It just brought people together, and it was supposed to be like this uplifting, you know, stress-free day, getting away from, you know, the real world and just delving into the entertainment of sports and the positive vibes. And you know, whether your team won or lost, you know, you're going to have, you know, hopefully create family memories and all these other things out of it. And then, like you're saying, it kind of, when they're, you know, dipping their hands in the pot to kind of mess around with things, it kind of takes away from some of that. So I think this is kind of bringing that positive culture back to like the stress-free, you know, less angry, harsh environment that sports was becoming there for a little bit. And it's allowing people to kind of grow together again as a whole and bringing people together in sports. So.
Absolutely, very much agreed.
Yeah, it's definitely opening up that can of worms a little bit more. It gives us people more than just the team and the history and the cultures and the tailgating and the parties or whatever that the common, but also another aspect to it of that commonality that you can have with your family or your friends, and then open up a whole nother dialogue of religion and God and whatever that it may be for whoever it is.
Right. Yeah, 100%. So really cool. To kind of segue a little bit away from this, and let's get into some other vibes that we got going on with sports and the NFL at the moment. So obviously all of our team, my team didn't even make the playoffs, so can't even speak on what that's like this year. But you guys both had teams that have lost in the playoffs, some controversial, some not controversial. Let's dive into the controversy of these sports. What
So,
how
how
are
are
you
you
guys
guys?
feeling about the officiating in these
These
plays? I
plays.
mean, there's obviously all the memes going around. There's people talking about it. Everyone, you know, the whole scripted thing has really come to light. And I don't know, it kind of adds a bit of humor to the sports, but at the same time, it kind of frustrates people a little bit. So let's dive into that. What do you
Yeah,
guys think
Andrew, since
about some
it's
of
fresh for you, you can certainly go first.
this? Open in the wound right away.
Yes, well, the wound was never closed. It's been a very rough less than 24 hours now. I think we're only at 22 hours at the time we're taping this, since the Bills were eliminated from the playoffs and some extremely controversial topics. I am beyond frustrated with the NFL and the way they're handling these calls and the referees. And I know that's the big topic. And with the Bills game, you can pick out three, four, five, six plays that were game-altering plays and calls, whether they were called or not, and how it just ruined the game. And I hate to say that, but it's just ruining the game not only for the Bills that lost, or who knows, they may have lost straight up, but just the calls and the way it's just made people feel, you know. And then the days after, I've had people do wellness checks on me, and people have already said that they don't want to watch the NFL next year. They are going to boycott the Super Bowl, and they actually want to. I've heard people have actually talked about that they're going to do their best effort to make all the movies in the movie theaters in the area on Super Bowl Sunday the most popular places over there watching the Super Bowl, because they don't want to support the rig of the NFL. And so I'm just frustrated with the calls and how it doesn't seem like there's an answer, or the NFL is looking to change anything.
Cole, what's your take?
So Andrew, I'll admit my wife is a huge Buffalo Bills fan. She's kind of picked up on that over the last handful of years. But yeah, I mean,
Go
over the
Bills, go
last,
Bills.
go Bills, go
It's because she
Bills.
thinks Josh Allen and his long hair is really attractive, isn't
Yeah, I mean, there's something to that.
it?
But
For a
no, I
very
mean,
heterosexual male, he is a very good-looking man.
he is. He is.
I said the same thing.
I will do my part.
No, I just think the Chiefs are such a good team. I don't think,
Are they though?
I mean, they're a great franchise. They certainly don't need any more help. But I mean, you see year after year, there's just questionable calls at pivotal moments, like Andrew said, where the Bills really had a stranglehold on that game. They're up by one with 12 minutes left in a opponent's territory. And when I watched that fourth down play live, I saw no reason to even challenge that play. I mean, it was obvious to me. And then you had two refs coming in at the different sides, and the ref that had visibility to the play, he deferred to the ref that was completely blinded. And then they marked the ball a half yard short, and that introduced the need to review the play, in which the refs threw their hands up in the air and said, "We can't make a judgment call." So all in all, I just think those scenarios, they're far too gray for my liking. I think if the NFL wants to keep the integrity of the game, they need to add some sort of feature to the ball, to the field, that, is 100% precise and can't leave any question to judgment calls by referees that are part-time employees.
But here's the question I have on that, and this is where, you'd think with all the technology we have today and all the replay assists and the fact that they actually have to go, there's a whole replay center in New York that they rely back on, right? And I don't know if you guys heard the Gene Steratore comments with that fourth down play that you're referring to in particular, but while I agree, I agree with what you're saying. I thought there was no doubt that he had that first down. The original judge that came in and marked it right away said that he had the first down, like gave him more than enough. When you look at the replay from about just about every angle, you can see that that ball crosses that, I think it was the 40-yard line is what it had to get across, and you could see it over the 40-yard line on like numerous different angles. So even Gene Steratore came in and his comment was, he's like, on a few different angles, I've seen the ball at least a third to two-thirds of the way on that line. He said, so in my opinion, I don't think that there's any doubt that he got the first down from his comments, and I agreed with him. And I actually messaged you during it, and I said, this is what's going to happen. I said, it's a Chiefs game. They're in the playoffs. This is a make or break for this game right here, this call. I said, they're going to call as stands because then it's a turnover on downs. I said, they're not going to call it call confirmed because they're not going to confirm it. They're going to call it a stand because they called it on the
Stan.
field. They re-ruled it on the field as short. So,
I
I
think they
agree with
need
you.
to completely remove that terminology. They can't say a play stands when you have, 25 different angles of replay.
Too
when you
many.
go to replay, you have to completely remove everything that you see previously and utilize replay to make a call. You can't rely on stands, especially in the playoffs. And the most important game of the year. I mean, this is the Bills Chiefs rivalry. It's come down to the Bills and Chiefs, what, Andrew, 4 out of the last 5 years?
Yes.
So, I mean, this is just a classic rivalry at this point. Like I said, the Chiefs don't need any more help, and it seems like whenever there's a pivotal moment in the game, they always get those calls, whether it's, this kind of scenario or like a 3rd and 10, and they need a holding call or something that guarantees a first down. It just seems to always go the Chiefs' way.
Right.
I
And
don't mean to sound like a bitter fan, but I've seen it year after year now.
if you look at the statistics too, think about it. The Chiefs and Bills have played each other 8 times in 5 years. And the four losses the Bills have had to the Chiefs were the postseason. Where does that, how does that happen? Statistically speaking, they should not be losing to them that many times. The Bills are. They beat them pretty handedly in the regular season. They came back healthier, both teams. Let's not get me wrong. Sometimes it's the way the ball drops. But that call, I don't know how the NFL can sit there and go, that ball did not cross the line from New York and say, no, you messed that up. That is a first down Buffalo. We've seen it at 15 different angles and not get that without any other kind of alternative motive.
I think
It
the
just
other one
leaves.
that we oh, go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say, I think it just leaves far too much gray area in the game. When you leave it up to the,
Agreed.
up to the ref's subjectivity, in a $1 billion league, I don't think that's fair for both teams. I've just
Agreed.
seen it far too often. I mean, the field goal posts move towards the Chiefs and all those scenarios. It's really hard to watch, in my opinion.
I saw an interesting statistic to even back this claim up even more today, in that 11 straight postseason games, the Chiefs have been penalized less than their opponent in 11 consecutive postseason games. And that's a lot. I mean,
I don't think that's a coincidence.
they have the highest or the offensive lineman who's had the most penalties on him over the course of the last few years in Juwan Taylor, and that goes through the regular seasons as well. I mean, there's been no offensive lineman who's been penalized more than him, and he didn't draw a single penalty in that game yesterday, which I find to be fascinating as well. And I know you can go back and look at replays and stuff and say, well, there was a false start there for sure. But to me, again, like you said, these guys are paid tons of money, even if it's referees in these sports, to be able to spot. I mean, you got two judges on the lines watching for things, and they're not picking them up. And I'm like, these are blatant stuff. Like, it's not even like these are subtle movements before, or almost simultaneously, where if you blink, you miss it. I mean, it's pretty blatant, some of them. And it's the other call that I think really got me in that game was the Xavier Worthy catch that they can't. I mean, again, gray area of a catch rule. Like, did he actually have the ball secure when they hit the ground? Because he certainly pinned it on the ground. So
Yeah,
does
I
that
don't think
ground
it's
help him secure
possible
it?
to catch the ball like that against the ground. I don't think it's possible.
He's
What
not
gets me
leaving.
about it is all of the how much of the ball was touching the ground.
Well, a lot.
It was like, I feel like it was half the football was touching the ground. Where's the line? Sometimes the ball comes in, it's just a tip, and they're like, oh no, that hit the ground. That's not its catch. And here it is. And like, if you look at it, to me, Cole Bishop had more control of that football than Xavier Worthy did when that ball hit the ground.
Exactly.
And it should have been an incomplete pass in mine, even though there was a defensive holding on the call. It would have been first down Kansas City, but it would have been a whole different golf ball game.
Oh yeah,
So
I mean,
there's a
you're talking
difference.
moving them. I mean, that was like what, a 35-yard pass completion or something. I mean, you're talking difference from field goal range and not field goal range on a 5-yard penalty versus a 35-yard catch. So it's a huge trajectory, because the Bills can still make a stand at that point, and potentially push them out. So, and just on that rule, I mean, I know you brought up about how they made the catch and together and all that stuff, and how the defender had more control over the ball. But the one thing that the NFL always does in those 50-50 calls is gives the benefit of the doubt to the offensive team, which is why, to me, that fourth down play is even more controversial, because they gave the benefit of the doubt to the defensive team by coming in and marking the ball short versus the offensive team on a 50-50 call. And even when they're at the goal line and you're getting touchdowns, they almost always rule it a touchdown, so that way they can go back and review it. So why is the goal line any different than the first down line? Like, you're still gonna want to try and give the offense the benefit of the doubt, because that's the way the NFL's been set up. So why is that call significantly different all of a sudden?
100% agreed. I
I
think,
know.
yeah, I think there's just something that needs to change within the ruling, especially in the playoffs. I think,
Yes.
I mean, I
Yes.
think that's another part of the problem is you have the Crews, they're handpicked by the NFL because of how well they did in the regular season. But when they're missing these kind of calls, I mean, that's a huge red flag that you need extra assistance. So.
Well, I guess my research would be they say they're handpicked, but what criteria are they using? And that may be food for thought and a whole nother rabbit hole to go down at one point. But like, I guess, Cole, you brought up a great point that I never thought about is technology within the football. Let's say the tip of the football did in fact cross the line, and what would that look like and how could that change the game? But at the same time, we could do something basic that there's what, 100 million fans watched the game last night. I don't know how many, I'm just making up a number, but probably 90 million of them are saying that was a first down. How can the
Absolutely.
guys wearing the striped shirts not get that call?
Think the
Or
only
people.
people who are saying it wasn't is Chiefs fans.
Yeah.
I
Do you
mean,
notice how I
everyone.
went 98%?
Yeah, I mean, and I'll even remove us from that game for a minute, and I'll even go to the other game that was played yesterday, because I was talking to you about this earlier today too. And while this wasn't in a crucial fourth down moment, but it can change the momentum of a game and cause a big swing. And this was the Eagles Commanders game earlier in the day. And I said this as well to people. And obviously, being that we're in Pennsylvania, I obviously get in a lot of arguments with the Eagles fans about this because they're all biased and they all can't see past their own bias.
We're close to
Yeah,
Philadelphia.
exactly. Way too close to Philadelphia. And so they can't see past their own bias. But if you look at the fourth down play that Jalen Hurts threw, and I'll give Jalen Hurts credit. I don't like Jalen Hurts as quarterback. I think he's subpar. But he threw a good throw to AJ Brown on that fourth down play. The downside to it was that there was a blatant holding call by Saquon Barkley that prevented Hurts from getting sacked or hit as he was throwing the ball, which would have ultimately led to an incomplete. But my point is that there was a holding call, and it was so blatant, like even Tom Brady was calling it out, and they brought in their special guest referee, which I can't remember who they had on Fox, but whatever his name was, and he didn't even know what to say. He was just like, "Yeah, I mean, it's just I don't know how to explain that that's missed." He's like, "It was so blatantly obvious. I don't know how they missed it." And so that fourth down play should have happened. But the reason why I'm bringing it up and how it can change the complexion of the game is that I think, the Eagles were either tied or up by like, less than a score at that point. And they went, they got the fourth down conversion. It moved them inside the 5 yard line on that. And then they were scored a few plays later. And then, it led to that opening or it led to the kickoff where Washington happened to fumble it. So again, the cause and effect is that if they call that holding call, Philly's punting that ball instead of going for it on fourth and short, and now all of a sudden that 7 points is off the board that they scored with off the AJ Brown catch, but then that fumble doesn't happen. So now you're negating a whole 2 scores. So instead of going up, whatever it was, 16, 17 points on the Commanders, they're only up less than a score, and the Commanders are getting the ball back with a chance to go back ahead. And it just changes the whole momentum of the game. And the Commanders were never able to make it up at that point. So I know everyone in Philly's like, "Oh, we won. We put up 50 points, blah, 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 blah." Well, again, when you have the momentum shift that way, it can even early in a game like that, it can set the stage for the rest of the game.
Absolutely.
So
Absolutely.
it went more from a dog fight to a slaughter, if you will.
yeah.
It was you could see it in the shift. I mean, do I think Philly could have won that game straight up?
Oh, sure.
Yes, they came to play, but a call like that definitely can help swing the game one way or the other. And I mean, as a Bills fan, and I watch it all the time, and sometimes you get a roughing the passer on Josh Allen, and you're like, it's a little light to be called, but I'll take it because it favors my team. But at the same time, I want to call it both ways. And sometimes
100%.
I've seen it, and I think it was last week with the Ravens. Deion Dawkins got called for holding, and he barely touched the guy.
Yeah.
And it's like he had his hands on him for about a half a second. You can't literally
Literally
grasp
grasp
and hold anybody in the
the
amount
amount
of
of
time the
time.
man touched him.
Yeah.
But then later on, there was the non-call against Lamar, I think it was, where he got hit out laid out of bounds, but there was no call. So I
Right.
feel like sometimes I've been like, you know what? Okay, that's fair. It called it both ways. Each one got away with one. That's fine. But when these Chiefs, you're not seeing that. I mean, the punt return that, I mean, there would have been seven different flags on that.
Should have been.
Now I will also say, to kind of not change the topic too much, but very similarly, the calls and the stuff, but I will not give the referees the full blame of that game. I love my man, Joe Brady. Buddy, tush push is not working against Kansas City right
Oh,
now.
100%. I mean, look,
Wow.
go ahead. Go ahead.
I was just going to say that it's not even like they run the traditional tush push. It's more like a quarterback sneak off their guard. I mean, he's not even really getting pushed in the butt. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. Between that and the fact that they seem to only want to play James Cook half the snaps, I mean, that is very questionable.
I was wondering that play calling as well. I think I messaged you at one point during the game too and said, "Man, I don't know what's going on. Like, why? Like, their bread and butter is running the football. And James Cook has been absolutely on one this year. Josh Allen with his legs has been absolutely on one this year. And I think at halftime, Josh Allen had like 6 rushing yards at the half, and James Cook only had like 23 rushing yards. And it's not like, I get you're trying to you assume the Chiefs are going to come out and load the box, so you want to drop back and maybe throw a few passes and see if you can get some stuff downfield. But I mean, in my opinion, Josh Allen on first, second, third down should not be dropping back and slinging that football. Like, you should have designed RPOs or runs or whatever going in there because that's their bread and butter, and they didn't do it. So I agree. Not to always blame the refs, but they certainly could have gotten off to a better start in that game from a play calling perspective. And then when they got it going in the second half, you saw them kind of take momentum of that game until those calls happened. So, they
That's
kind of put it out of reach.
very interesting you bring it up, because you're right. In the first half, Buffalo's beating themselves, and the play call selection, maybe not running James Cook as much as they could have. But as I said at halftime, only down what, five or so at the point at half, I said the Bills are a second half team. They have been all year. Their defense comes out and stops them, and what do? They stop Kansas City for two series in a row, held them to nothing, and Buffalo marched right down the field. Rush, 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 rush. So pretty much James Cook got tired. I mean, if you looked at him in that one drive, he was exhausted. And that's, I get it. But then that's when the refs, I feel like, really made some of those calls that altered the game. Now, the Xavier Worthy happened in the first half, but some of those calls was just crazy.
Right.
I think, I mean, if you told the Bills going into the game that they would have, zero turnovers, I think that is the recipe to success in winning the game. And that's exactly what they did. They won the turnover battle. They had one less turnover than the Chiefs. But between how the game ended on that last drive and the pivotal call on fourth down, I mean, outside of that, they played a very clean game. So.
Agreed. So here's one other call stuff that I want to get into, and I kind of briefed him on this earlier today as well, but and Cole, I'd like to get your take on this, is this whole offensive pass interference versus defensive pass interference stance. So one of the things that drives me nuts, and I watched this happen in both games yesterday, and I can't wrap my head around how refs are making these calls on these pass interferences. So in particular, what I'm talking about here is when a receiver is running down the field and they're throwing these go routes, the receiver's turning and looking for the ball. And when he's turning and looking, he's actually putting his arm behind him to create airspace between him and the defender who's trailing him. And what ends up happening naturally as a defender, you're trying to hand joust with that receiver to close that airspace up. And then in the process, it obviously is going to look like you're grabbing the receiver's arms, but the receiver's going to keep trying to push their arm further and further and up into that defender to keep them at arm's length. So that way they have space to then, go up for the ball and hopefully win that ball. So I saw at least two, three times, I think it was AJ Brown get the pass interference calls on Lattimore or whoever else was defending him. And I think Hollywood Brown or someone on the Chiefs got the similar call in that game yesterday where they were doing the same thing. The defender's trailing, they're pushing the defender away to keep him arm's length. So how is it a defender's at fault for a flag there if the offensive player is creating the space, and as a defender, you're just trying to push their arm away or move their arm out of your way so you can clear into that airspace that, as a defender, you have the right to as well. And so, to me, that's not a foul. That's just two guys fighting for the same airspace to be able to make a play on a football. So, how do we justify that call as well? Like, it's so minimal contact as well most of the time, and it's so quick. Like you said, not even a second, half a second, whatever. I mean, it's so minimal that it doesn't really disrupt, in my opinion, the receivers from making a play on the ball, because they're the ones that are taking away their ability to make a play by trying to push that arm space anyway. So I don't know. It's a really controversial one for me that I think the NFL needs to clean up and start allowing defenses to play defense again and get rid of these, you know, bullshit calls to appease the scoring gods out there.
Yeah, but I will say,
sorry, go ahead, Andrew.
I was gonna say the Mac Hollins catch. If you look at that, Mac Hollins somehow automatically gained about a half a yard of separation. His arm was fully extended. I was impressed that he did not call offensive pass interference on that. So I'm right there with you. There is that line that is very, very gray, and it seems to be growing wider and wider, that it's calling more on the defense to keep the offense open. But yeah, Cole, what are your thoughts?
Oh, I was just going to say, I think just from a macro perspective, I think that's kind of allowed some of these skinnier body type receivers to be successful outside receivers. Obviously, some big time receivers take advantage of it more, but just thinking in a sense like Devontae Smith, Xavier Worthy, I really don't think in the 1990s, 2000s rules, they would be able to play on the outside just with their body type and strength. So like you guys said, I think that's kind of introduced, a new way to play receiver, a new body archetype, allow for more speed on the outside rather than, 6'3", 220. A lot of these guys that come into the league now, Tank Dell, they're 170, 180 pounds. And I think that's kind of the reason why you see more of this air raid style offense, because the rules have changed so much over the year. So I do agree with your point, Evan. I think it's, made for a completely different game and very difficult on the defense.
But are we, so by allowing the receivers to be more active in where they're lining up, is that, do we think that's a better thing for the game than being able to allow guys to play where their strengths are? And that would be, making it a fair call for the defenses. I mean, where does the NFL go with that?
I think just being a defender has got to be nearly impossible now, because you have to hit a very small target. You have to be conscious of what the quarterback's doing at all times, whether they're sliding, whether they're going out of bounds. I mean, they could be penalized for almost anything in any given play. So I think it's extremely hard to be a defender, and you have to have the right technique. And maybe that's good for the game, but certainly much different than the last, 10, 12 years, I would say.
Well, I will say the NFL is a business, and the NFL is listed as an entertainment business. So if you think about it that way, WWE is entertainment. You can believe all you want, Evan. It's not real.
Are you telling me that that chair does not actually make that big of a thud when you hit someone on the head?
No. But they're in the business of making money. And so allowing those ticky-tack calls to put up the scores, the NFL as a fan, you want to see, for the most part, I mean, it's always probably diehards, like, I'd like to see a good defensive battle. But at the same time, if it's 42-35, that's a lot of scoring. That's a lot of touchdowns. It's a lot of celebrations. It's a lot of good plays. That's what makes money. That's what sells tickets. That's what sells T-shirts. Because now you can say Josh Allen threw for 10 touchdowns, or Jordan Love threw, or Justin Jefferson went off for 250 yards and 7 touchdowns in a game. All of that stuff, you can keep selling that and make that extra money, because it is a business of entertainment. And that's why the defense is no longer defense. It's how can we slow them down? How can we cause them to make mental mistakes? How can we cause Justin Jefferson to not catch that football? How can we get those players to flip and fall down and not get the first down or anything along those lines? It's how do we slow them down, maybe make a mistake or two, we get the ball back, so our offense can put up more points than you, and we win. They're saying now, in the 1990s, they're saying if you hold someone under 15 points, you're going to win the game.
Yeah.
Now it's up to hold the team to under 24 points, and you can win the game.
That's crazy.
And that's like 20 years. Yeah. That's 10 point difference.
Yeah, that's huge. It's a big swing. Like, I mean... And I guess the way that I look at it, too, is like you were saying about the whole scenario. And I want to bring this up, too, on this topic. I think it's relevant in this, is how does this affect even the gambling sports world as well? Like, think about all, and Cole, I'm big on this, just the betting in the sports world, right? And and how that impacts people. Because if you got different guys who can go off any given week instead of the same routine guys like Calvin Johnson would have early in the 2000s because he was a freak, or Andre Johnson for the Texans and Chad Johnson for, what's up with Johnson? There's way too many Johnsons in the 2000s. I will call him Ocho Cinco to keep it a bit, you know, diverse on the names here. But
Chris Johnson, CJ2K.
another one. I mean, come on. These guys that would utilize their actual gifted abilities to go off on a daily, weekly, or on a weekly basis, and you'd have those guys. But, you know, like you were saying, Cole, I think it's opening up for other players now to be able to, I don't know, earn their contracts and then helps the NFL with their businesses and, you know, helps on those side ventures with the gambling, because now people are going to throw more money and be like, I don't know who's going to hit. So they're going to make more money because you may not always pick the right person every week, whereas it's probably more predictable back then, where everyone's taking the under on every player except for those few handful of guys. So come on.
I think
So.
that's just it. I think that's the focus of the NFL. I mean, anything that helps business, whether it's, you know, gambling or outside factors like Taylor Swift and her fans, it helps business. Owners are happy, commissioners happy, teams are happy, players are happy, everyone's happy. So
Except for
I
us bitter
think
fans.
that's right. That's right. So unfortunately, I think it's gone too far in that direction, and I just hope that they kind of protect the integrity of the game, in the sense of, you know, getting calls right, making sure that there's a fair playing field and not just favoring towards the Kansas City Chiefs. So
Now, Cole, let me ask for you for your perspective on this. You know, some people are saying that the Chiefs Eagles Super Bowl is, we'll use the word sexier to sell for the NFL than maybe a Bills Washington or a Bills Eagles. Like, how much do you think it's swinging, maybe at a percentage of how many more people are going to watch the Super Bowl because the Chiefs are in it? And in your opinion, if that makes any sense at all.
Yeah, no, I think it does, because my mother-in-law has become a Chiefs fan over the last few years. My grandparents support the Chiefs. They haven't ever found interest in football, so I have a few personal examples that would certainly lead me to believe that people are going to tune in to watch the Chiefs. But I mean, myself as a longtime fan, I would have much rather seen the Bills and Commanders Super Bowl, just because I think those are two exciting teams to. Well-deserving teams this year, and teams that have rarely found success and have had major heartbreaks, especially the Bills. So.
Right. And I guess you hit it right on my point, because I guess my other question, my follow-up to that is, do you think your grandparents or your parents or these Chiefs fans, would they have tuned in to the Super Bowl if the Chiefs were not in it?
Likely not. I think that's definitely a fair argument.
And then I think that's funny is I've heard people say that they've met quote unquote Chiefs fans, but they can't name more than one player. And then you're like, can I name Travis Kelce?
He's sort of a household name at this point because of Taylor Swift, isn't he?
He really
Right.
is, yeah.
But and it was brought up to me this morning, and it was a very valid question. And it was asked this, and I was almost embarrassed to admit this. If you did not know about Travis and Jason Kelce as brothers, and I said the name Ch Jason Kelce, A, would you know who he is?
Probably not.
No.
Right. So now you know Jason Kelce, you know Kylie Kelce, you know Travis Kelce, all because of Taylor Swift.
The Taylor Swift impact, yep. Yeah, 100%.
It's all business. So why not put the Chiefs, Jason Kelce, back together one more time? Jason Kelce's right there. He's a year removed from the league. It's gold for them to sell it, to get all these extra fans one more year, if not more, and then go from there. But I did see a stat, and this is my love for J for Josh Allen. MJ didn't win a ring till 7th year. And Peyton didn't
That's
get one till his 8th year, so we still got hope for Josh Allen.
right. That's a fair comparison,
I
but that would
think
be at Evan's expense because he directly would play the Bengals.
was gonna say you're forgetting one thing, except for Cincinnati's gonna make a comeback with all their changes. But we'll see.
They got to get through the first four games.
Well, you know, such is life. Who cares about the first four games, right? What do that even mean? I think we should just skip weeks 1 through 4 and just start playing in week 5. Like, come on. I mean, but on a serious note, so just to kind of one more topic I really want to talk about here before we sign out for the day, but Super Bowl predictions for you guys, and then your off-season feelings coming up for your teams and where you think these are going to go, because obviously the Bills probably have some work that they can do. The Vikings probably, I mean, they've got big quarterback questions. But first of all, what do you guys think is going to happen in the Super Bowl? I mean, I obviously being around here in Philly, a lot of Eagles fans are hopeful. I spoke to a few today, and some of them are like, well, we are hoping for the Bills because we just know that obviously something's going to happen and some call is going to come up and the Chiefs are going to benefit. We're going to end up losing because of the Chiefs. Maybe, maybe not. But I mean, where do we think that we're going to land here?
Andrew, would you like to go first?
Yeah, I can go first. I think Buffalo opened up a weakness of Kansas City and how they came out of that second in that second half and dominated the line of scrimmage, and James Cook ran all over them. You have, I don't know if Kenny Gainwell's coming back for the Eagles. I don't know how well his bell got rung, but Saquon Barkley, hands down, top two running back in the league. Outside of Derrick Henry, gonna run all over them. I feel like if they can keep that up, run all over
Love
that,
that
they got
too.
that dangerous tush push there,
Yeah.
the Philly brotherly shove or whatever they call it. That is
Brotherly
just
shove.
unstoppable. I definitely think the Eagles will give the Chiefs everything they can. I do think though the Eagles can squeeze it out. I really do think, and I don't know if this is me secretly hoping that Patrick Mahomes loses in the Super Bowl, but I do think the Eagles will win. And if I had to throw a score on it, like 35-31 or something along those lines.
Fair, fair. Yeah, I think the Eagles have a very particular strength. So if they can stick to that strength of committing to the run, staying out of third and long, they'll certainly be successful. So I think, their focus is obviously sticking to the ground game, making sure Saquon gets 20, 25 carries. As long as they, like I said, stay out of third and long, stay away from turnovers. I think they'll certainly beat the Chiefs, maybe even handily, because I think, if they stay at that strength, you could see something like they performed this week, putting up 50 plus points. Granted, the Chiefs are a much stronger defense, but that's just the way the Eagles would like to play. However, if you get to them in passing situations, third and long, I think they're very susceptible to turnovers.
Yeah,
So
agreed.
third down is probably the biggest factor in the game. I think the Chiefs certainly excel in that department more than anyone, whether it's by, their own production or by assistance from the referees. So I think if it's that kind of game, which I personally think it will be, I think the Chiefs will game plan to stop Barkley. My prediction is the Chiefs are going to win 26-21.
It's not bad. I'm gonna I'll give my take here too, real quick. I also think the Chiefs are gonna win. And here's my reason why. We can sit here and rag on them and all the calls and everything we want. I still firmly believe this, that Andy Reid is one of the best coaches that's ever played in the game of football, or ever coached in the game of football. And I think Steve Spagnuolo is one of the best coordinators that have ever set foot on a defensive side of the football. The way he can scheme, the way that he can plan for teams, it's incredible what he can get out of his players and how he maximizes them. And I will give him credit. And the thing that I like about Spags is that he hasn't felt that he needed to move on from being the defensive coordinator. He's learned his role and his place and where he's really, really good, and he continues to play to that strength, and he hasn't gone out to get a head coaching job and potentially flop. But I think those two combinations between Andy Reid's offensive play style calling to find weaknesses in defenses like he did last time they played the Eagles with those short out routes to get them over that hurdle and those play calls on the offensive side, and then Steve Spagnuolo's ability to disguise defenses, I just think trump what Philly's coaching coordinators bring to the game. And to Cole's point, I think the passing game of the Eagles is their weakness. Now, while they have great weapons in A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith, who somehow always doesn't catch a ball but gets it called favorable catch, drives me absolutely bonkers. And then Dallas Goedert is a hell of a tight end. But their weakness is Jalen Hurts. He's actually what holds that passing game back. I know there's a lot of people around here that love Jalen Hurts and thinks he's great and all these things, but even yesterday he proved in that game that if you can get him to stand in the pocket for a few seconds and have to go through his progressions, he can't make it past his second progression. That's his biggest flaw in a play call. Like, you know, for as good as Saquon Barkley is, I mean, think about all the receiving yards he even racked up in New York. And then think about the lack of receiving yards he gets here in Philly because Jalen Hurts doesn't go through his progressions and check it down to Saquon Barkley, even though it's there all day long. He's always looking at his top two targets on that play, and if they're not open, he panics and he scrambles out and he tends to either take a sack, throw the football away, or sometimes even turn it over. So, because he'll force it. So I think, like you said, if Spags can come up with a plan for Saquon Barkley to slow him down and they tell the Eagles, if you're going to beat us, it's got to go through Jalen Hurts' arm. I don't know that they can do it. I don't know that Jalen Hurts has the ability to drop back, throw 50 times, and be accurate enough with that scenario to win the Super Bowl. I just don't think he's that kind of quarterback. He's a game manager.
They're going to try they're going to try to play Lamar Jackson, essentially. Lamar Jackson's very similar. Kyler Murray's extremely similar. And Cole nailed it right on the head. Third down for the Philadelphia Eagles will make or break the Super Bowl. I definitely agree with you. Just watching the way Saquon and that offense runs the football, if you can run like the Bills were running against the Chiefs and other teams ran against the Chiefs, pick up 4 yards of play, your third downs are going to be manageable.
Yep.
Minimize your plays, things like that. Spags is one heck of a defensive coordinator. I will not grant that. I think, though, there's too much talent in Philadelphia's team, both on the offense and the defensive side of the football, that they're going to cause havoc to the game plan. And I think the edge will be on the running game, because I think that's Kansas City Chiefs' weak link is the run game, and that's Philadelphia's strength.
Right.
But I also think the defense of the Eagles, I mean, that defensive tackle, Jalen Carter, is a force. Yeah. That is a Chris Jones 2.0.
Yeah.
And then there's defensive backs, and it's Cooper DeJean has just came into his own as a rookie, and I mean, that defense is stacked. And if it's just like almost any game, it's any given Sunday, as long as everyone shows up and plays your part, it's going to be the which way the ball bounces or who gets that one favorable call, that one favorable catch. But I think that third down for the Philadelphia Eagles on offense is going to be the key that makes or breaks the Super Bowl for the Eagles to win the game.
Agreed.
Absolutely.
So off-season, what do we think is going to happen here? You mean the Vikings? Where are they going to turn to? Are they going to bring Sam Darnold back? Are J.J. McCarthy going to finally get his opportunity? What's going to happen to your team, man?
Yeah, no, I think just strictly off of vibes, I don't think they're going to bring Darnold back. I know people have talked about the franchise tag, but those last two games left a really sour taste in my mouth, and I believe the rest of the Vikings nation is kind of feeling the same way. So even though he won 13 games this year, or 14 actually, I just don't think it's enough to bring him back. You've invested a top, what was it, 12 pick in a quarterback. If they don't go that route, I think they'll choose to bring in someone in the likes of, Rodgers or a seasoned veteran to give JJ one more year.
That was going to be my question. I was going to say, do they bring Darnold back on a 1 year contract and say, like, look, you know, we need that veteran leadership. We need you to kind of fill that void for the first few games so we can get McCarthy into that game flow and then turn the reins over to him at some point. Like, is that using the franchise tag as well? I mean, I don't know what that tag's going to cost you guys for a quarterback, but I mean, it's a 1 year deal. So is that the way that they can bring him back, you know?
Yeah, certainly. I think that's certainly a possibility. And that's what I assumed was going to happen before the last couple of games. But yeah, I just don't know if you can invest. I believe it's estimated between 45 and 50 million when you have a second year quarterback still on a rookie contract. I just think there's probably other ways to go with your money. I certainly think there's other holes they could fill, whether it's offensive line or defense. So,
Well, that's what I was going to also ask you. Like, with the struggles of Sam Darnold, I mean, can you pin that all on him, or does the offensive line need to be shored up, like you're saying? And how would that have impacted his play those last two games? Because I mean, I think they had some injuries down the stretch there. So,
They did. I just there was something that happened, I think, between the ears with Darnold over the last couple of games. Just don't know how you can go from playing MVP caliber football to the last few games taking, you know, 8+ sacks in both games. So I don't know. I just think that you probably need to go in a different direction. I think, you know, we saw enough over the last couple of weeks. I think the talent was there, even with the offensive line deficiencies. You were playing without Darisaw for half the year, so I don't think that's really a valid excuse. I think the play calling got really timid over the last month. I'd say it's a combination of play calling and Darnold's performance. So with that, I would say they go in the direction of playing JJ next year.
And I guess that was going to be my follow-up to you, Cole, because I admittedly did not watch many Minnesota Vikings games at all, so I have really never seen them play. So did they win because of Sam Darnold's play, or was he a game manager where I'm not going to turn the ball over, I'm not going to get sacked, I'm going to make it just enough to let my team win and let the defense win? Because I remember watching all of those defensive touchdown celebrations, the dances and everything, they were coming in. So was Sam Darnold even a great quarterback game in and game out, or did he just have four or five really good games and the rest were all kind of mediocre?
No, I mean, I'm looking at his stats right now. He threw 35 touchdowns over the course of the season. And if I recall correctly, I think he had a handful of 3-touchdown games. So I do think he was a key cog of the offense the entire year, just up until the last couple of games. And then he turned into old Sam Darnold. But I think the first time I really felt like the Vikings were serious this year was when they played Green Bay on the road. I think they put up 28 points in the first half, and Sam Darnold had four first half touchdowns. And that's when I really felt like, you know, he was legit, and the Vikings have a chance this year. So just complete night and day difference from that Darnold versus late season Darnold. And with that, I think there was something going on mentally. I just think some guys perform better under the lights, and I think that's really a big part of playoff football, to be honest with you. It comes down
Agreed.
to which team makes the least amount of mistakes. And I mean, if you're taking 8+ sacks and turn the ball over, that's just not going to be good enough.
Well, ask Joe Burrow what that's like, because they made it to the Super Bowl doing that. I mean, I'm sorry, what?
All right, well,
that was quite the run. I forgot that he took that many sacks. Wasn't it like 30 over the course of the playoffs?
Yeah, he had 9 against the Titans in that game, and they still somehow pulled that game out, and I still don't know how it happened to this day, other than the fact that Ryan Tannehill is garbage. So,
That's wild.
thanks
That
for
is
Ryan
wild.
Tannehill. Yeah, it's but I agree with you. I mean, I think, Sam Darnold showed a lot of real, and again, I didn't get to see every Vikings game either, but I because of the relationship you and I have as far as chatting football and stuff, I mean, I certainly caught up on the stats and the highlights of the games and things like that. And he really impressed me a lot. I mean, you look back at where he was with the Jets and then even with the Panthers and how abysmal he was as a quarterback, but he really showed a lot throughout the season, which is why it's, like you said, it surprises me that he floundered under the lights. But it also, like you said, there's quarterbacks that are like that. I mean, Peyton Manning was like that for much of his career. I mean, he was a seasoned quarterback. Lamar Jackson, in season quarterback. He cannot win in the playoffs. And it's not even just all him, but it's like, but they feed off of his energy. And he has been infamous to turn the football over in big games in the playoffs. And so,
Absolutely.
you don't want a quarterback like that, and you need a guy who can bring out his best at that time of year. And for as much as I hate the guy, that's and they get favorable calls, but that's Patrick Mahomes. I mean, let's just call a spade a spade. I mean, that guy gets to the playoffs and he flips a freaking switch and it just drives me up a wall. So Tom Brady was the same way.
Absolutely. No denying that. Absolutely. Just to wrap up the point on the Vikings, I guess. I mean, I think with their coach, they've obviously locked him down in an extension. He's proved over the years that you know, he can help quarterbacks produce, whether it's Nick Mullins, whether it's Josh Dobbs. They've all had periods of success.
Agreed.
And I just think that the well's maybe dried up with Darnold. Teams kind of caught on to what his weaknesses are. So I think it's just time to move in a different direction.
All right, Cole, one more follow-up. Your general manager of the Minnesota Vikings. You don't have to name players unless you know specific players. What is one player and or position you're targeting in free agency and then in the draft, first round?
That's a great question. I haven't dove too far into the draft quite yet, admittedly.
But if you were to dream up and be like, ooh, I really think we need to hit our offensive line.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest focal point, especially interior offensive line. I think the tackles are rock solid, especially when they get Darisaw back, but the interior offensive line is certainly an issue. That would be the position.
We're gonna fight you for that interior line, buddy.
What would you think, Evan? What's the Bengals need this offseason?
We had what, the two of the four worst guards in football this year, so we are 100%. If we don't draft or go after a guard in free agency, it's we don't want to win. And our defense was abysmal, but I think that offensive line, because again, you pay Joe Burrow stupid amounts of money, and you gotta protect him. So he's gotta be your number one asset, and I think we gotta target that. I mean, obviously the defense, it'll be interesting. I actually saw some really cool threads about the defense and the fact that there is talent there. And while I like Lou Anarumo from a scheming standpoint, one thing that they said that he really lacked as a coach is his ability to develop young players. So you look at how the Bengals have drafted in previous years, they've drafted a lot of players on the defensive side, and they've never been able to maximize those guys' potential. And you got to start looking at the coaching staff as that reason why, like year after year. Like, and his best seasons as our defensive coordinator when we had a lot of veteran talent on that defensive side of the ball, and that's when we were able to make those runs to the Super Bowl and then the AFC Championship game the following year. And it's he can scheme, but he can't develop. So if he has already a solid talent that know their role, that's where he's going to shine. But so I'll be interesting to see what Al Golden brings to the defensive side. I like Al Golden. He was just that defensive coordinator at Notre Dame, and when he took over that role, he vastly improved their defense. And obviously you're working with young college players who are just coming up through the ranks and trying to make a name for themselves to get drafted. So I think that says a lot about his ability to coach young talent. So maybe we don't change a whole lot on the defensive side like some people think, and you give Al Golden that opportunity to show that he can develop these guys that we already have in the works, and we target other areas like getting T and Jamar locked down to long-term contracts and then getting that interior offensive line shored up. So, if I'm pipe
Absolutely.
dreaming, that's what I'm hoping for.
There you go. What about you, Andrew?
Let's see. Buffalo Bills. Let's see. I think this offseason, I mean, if you a lot of people forget the Buffalo Bills this year were, they were told they were going to get third in the AFC East behind the Jets and the Dolphins. And they clinched in what, week 12? So, and they also carried 30. $5 million of dead cap space. So I think priorities for the Buffalo Bills, and try the only reason I asked this is because I've thought about this. Stretch out Josh Allen's contract. He's already signed a $7 million, but I think he's 4 3 or 4 years into it. Stretch it out, make him what he deserves. Start spreading that money out over the course of maybe the next 7 years, and start getting some of these guys that are on their fourth or fifth year. Getting them some long-term contracts. Your Greg Rousseau is in the defensive end. Maybe do you look to sign James Cook for a 3 or 4 year stand extension? Terrell Bernard, maybe bring in some free agency in the defensive tackle. That is definitely a weak link. We rotated defensive tackles all the time as far as bringing them in off the practice squad, things like that. And then he really hit the draft hard with defensive backs and safeties. Now you're probably sitting there going, Andrew, what about wide receivers? No, the Buffalo Bills had a culture in that locker room this year of everyone eats and everyone's in this together. And I think that is bigger than one name. If you can buy in on a culture, that's huge. And I think that's what the Bills have. And I think if you can sign Amari Cooper, that'd be great. But we were doing decent without him. Because if you think about it, he only put up, what, 400 yards as a
Yeah,
Buffalo Bill
that
and three
surprised me.
touchdowns?
Yeah, that surprised me a lot. I would have expected a lot more out of Amari Cooper.
But he loved playing in Buffalo. He loved playing. He was winning, and they were having fun, and they were enjoying the game. So as far as that, free agency, defensive back, safety, defensive tackle, same thing with the draft. Hit those three positions, I think, are the hardcore hitting positions. You got Matt Milano, who's getting a little older, but I still think he's got a year under him, but he was out half the year. So you've got guys underneath him that have young, valuable years of experience that can run with it. You're going to have $30 extra million dollars to play with now. Start spreading some of that money out. Get those guys on long-term deals and front load your contract and come back next year with the same group. That offensive line, I think they had one player miss one game the entire season.
Solid.
Spencer Brown, right tackle, missed one game.
But do you
Yeah.
think, like, you bring up the wide receiver thing, and I want to ask this question real quick on the Bills wide receivers is, you look at a lot of these successful franchises, and they have a go-to target. They don't have a receiver by committee. So when you get into these third down and longs, the Bengals always turn to Ja'Marr Chase usually to try and find a way to get him the ball in those big moments. The Chiefs for years did it with Travis Kelce. The Vikings do it with Justin Jefferson. They have those acquired superstar, if you will, or their go-to target. Josh Allen doesn't have that. So how does that, as a, how do you view that? Because if I'm a quarterback, and you see how these other franchises look, I mean, you want to have that go-to guy. If I'm a
Yeah.
quarterback, I would think in
In
those
those big
big moments to say, help bail me out of
Bendy
this jam. Like he had Stephon Diggs for years.
Yeah. I would
I
argue with that, Evan. Sorry. One
No, go for
real quick, Evan. I would argue with that. I would say Khalil Shakir is a very underrated receiver, very extremely reliable. It probably has some of the best hands in the league, and he won't be appreciated to the point where you don't need to sign a massive contract. So I think using that as kind of a chess piece for their offensive weapons in the offseason is going to really help them out. And this is going to sound like a negative, Andrew, but I promise it's a positive. I think there's a lot of ways the Bills can get better this offseason. Personally, I don't think their roster is all that impressive. When you're playing guys like Ty Johnson and Mac Hollins in massive roles, I mean, these guys have been cast-offs for their entire career. I think Mac Hollins is 31 years old, been with six teams. Ty Johnson's 20, 26, 27, and has never really had a role with any team. When they're some of your biggest playoff contributors, I think that's a sign of one, good culture, but I think you can bring guys in off the street and for them to produce. I certainly think there's positions that they can replace and be much better next year. So
I see why you say that 100%, and you're right. But I definitely see with the Stephon Diggs, and now don't get me wrong, Stephon Diggs may be different than any other quarterback, but if you've got a guy that wants to eat all the time, it's going to get noticed. Evan, you just asked a question, like, does he have a reliable person? I think you can name three or four players that he could turn to and say, James Cook, Dalton Kincaid, Dawson Knox, Shakey, Amari Cooper a little bit, to say, hey, go catch this ball. Now your defense is saying, like, I don't have, Justin Jefferson's going to get this ball. Let's put two guys or three on him and play man across the board. Well, now
Now
you're
you're
trying to,
trick.
you're taking that guy away. Whereas Buffalo, you're like, who's getting the ball? We don't know. Mac Hollins, name another, starting wide receiver that's laying out a punt returner on a punt. And getting up and going crazy. And so I think while these players are role players, they're talented enough to be in the NFL and they're talented enough to do whatever is asked to them. Ty Johnson, they're not all greedy. They're all, this is not my day to eat. And that's okay. And I think that's the culture that when you're scheming up as a defense, okay, who are they feeding? If I'm going up against the Bengals, where's Ja'Marr Chase? Where's T. Higgins? All right, everyone else, you got to beat me. And if you're going against the Vikings, where's JJ? All right, everyone else, you got to beat me. I mean, you got Aaron Jones and you got, who's the
Hoke.
other guy?
Hockenson is their tight end, who's a beast, and you got Jordan Addison, right. who's not a terrible number two receiver either.
How are you guys not in the Super Bowl?
That's what I'm saying.
We're just naming your entire roster here at this point. Like, what's happening, man?
You guys need a quarterback.
It's the quarterback, though. I mean, if you have a rock solid quarterback, I mean, there's just no way that team can fail. With the weapons and the play calling, I mean, there's just no way the wheels should have fell off like they did.
And then you look at a team like the Chiefs, and none of those guys really statistically, I don't recall having an amazing, beyond amazing year on the offensive side of the ball. It's very mediocre.
I mean,
seasons.
Yeah, the first couple of weeks they had Rashee Rice, who was going off, and he was going to be their star guy. I mean, they intended to just feed him the ball. I mean, you could see it out of the first couple of games. That was their game plan for the season, is feed him the football as much as possible and let him feast, like you said. And obviously he went out with a season-ending injury, and then they kind of had to pivot. And they have star guys on their team. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, Hollywood Brown has been a big-time receiver. DeAndre Hopkins has been a big-time receiver. So they've filled the void with other quality talent. But, I mean, and again, Hopkins is towards the end of his career, and Hollywood Brown, I mean, he's a good, solid number two to have there. So, I mean, they've got the talent. I don't know. It's hard to say. But they have guys that they can feed all day long, too, if they really wanted to on that offense. But,
And yet the Bills were able to do it with what some would call, and Cole just called it out, lesser quality players, and they were able to put up massive points. They have all these records, and we don't need to go into how many records they broke, but they have 14 different players have a receiving touchdown this year, and is the only team in the history to do that. That's incredible.
Yeah.
And absolutely. So I think, do we invest in a wide receiver for the core to make him better? Yes. Do we need to waste a top draft pick for it, or go out and sign some guy to a mega deal? No. I think you have enough on your offensive to move the ball, continue to get it. You got the AFC Championship and lost by 3 on controversial calls.
Yeah.
I think your offense is where you need it. The defense is our weakest point in Buffalo to shore up and make sure that we can get one of those additional stops. But at the same time, too, the Bills were number 2 in the defense in takeaways. They had one game all season. They did not have a takeaway.
Yeah, I thought they played really good as a unit all season. I think really what killed them in the Chiefs game was Benford going out.
That's why I'm saying defensive back.
Yeah, exactly. I think that it was obviously a weakness. And when he goes out and it becomes, you know, obvious weakness, that's certainly mm-hmm. something you need to shore up in the offseason. So
the Chiefs just targeted Elam after that injury. They just did not stop throwing it in his direction because they knew he wasn't going to defend them. Like, they just
and that's something you can easily shore up in the draft. I think if you just, you know, hammer home on defensive back, you're going to find someone that can produce. So, I think there's a lot of ways the Bills can improve, man. I certainly would be optimistic. So
I know I am. And I know Elam is a first round bust. He was a 24 overall pick or whatever it was. And I think he's an absolute bust, but yeah, safety, defensive back, defensive tackle, maybe even move on from Von Miller, get out and go grab another defensive end.
About his contract, like he's on a mega contract and he's got to be close to retirement as well. So, you know,
go ahead, Andrew.
I was going to say, if he does one more year, I think he'd be okay, but I think if they cut him this year, it's only like a $3 million cap hit, whereas last year it would have been another $20 million or something like that. So it's like we were keeping him this past season no matter what.
Right.
And he turned out, but...
But he was a third down, you know, sub end at that point. Mm-hmm. They weren't using him as an every down end at that point. They were just bringing him into those blitzing pass rushing scenarios pretty much. So...
And his leadership in the locker room.
Of course. So. All right. Well, I appreciate you guys coming on, joining me for this chat. Had a really good one, probably a long chat. But it's been great. You guys have had some good points, good takes on things, and I appreciate your guys' stance on all this. So thanks, and hope everyone enjoyed the podcast.
Thanks so much for having me on. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.